Big Sloth.
You looking at that couple inside?
Actually, I was just looking at this little pink number over here.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of nice. They look happy, don't they?
What, the bras?
No, the couple. They look happy.
I guess, as far as couples go.
You know, it reminds me of an issue of Spider-Man I did when Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy went lingerie shopping. Of course, the Green Goblin showed up, and he pumpkin-bombed the hell out of the place. But aside from that, it's pretty much the same thing.
Oh, my God. Holy shit! Aren't you?
Oh, Stanley. Hi.
Hobo Radio, the official podcast of HoboTrashCan.com. You can share your thoughts on the show anytime by emailing Joel at murphyslaw@HoboTrashCan.com.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman, and you're listening to Hobo Radio. So stay tuned.
And now, two guys with worse jokes than me. Joel Murphy and Lars.
Hello again. I'm Joel Murphy. This is Hobo Radio. And with me this week, special guest and fellow slother. Did we ever? We've never come up with what we call ourselves, but fellow peaky. Marty McGuire.
It got worse.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. I feel like sloth is already a noun.
Yeah.
So we could just be sloths. Yeah.
Also, Peaky, not okay, and just makes you think of Peaky Blinders, the show that I've never actually watched. But
yeah, I haven't seen it either. I wasn't sure. By the way you said it's not okay, I thought that was a review, which I would take. I wouldn't expect it to be good.
It just sounds like a way that you would warn someone about someone who was like, that guy, he's kind of peaky.
He's a little peaky, yeah.
So it doesn't sound all right.
No, it's, yeah. It does sound kind of like a slur of some kind.
But no, thank you. I'm excited. I hit you up at the last minute to fill in for Lars, which you were very kind to do. And
I will do my best. Lars's shoes are an odd size, I have to say. I did not expect them to fit this way on my feet. It's uncomfortable.
But also, I'm excited because I was curious, since I have you here. You're on my show. I listened to your show this past week, and you were not on it. But Jonathan was on it reading Shakespeare.
he was. And in fact, I realized after I said yes that being on Hobo Radio this week actually puts me in a little bit of an odd position. Because ever since I moved, I've been having a really hard time getting a schedule narrowed down. And Jonathan and I have had trouble coordinating. And so the sweet, wonderful human being that he is, he has just been carrying on. We have to ask week after week. And when we coordinate, we get an episode. And when we don't, he does something. And they are all, they've each been delightful to me.
I was riveted in a way that, by
yeah.
That. Yeah.
They're all so wonderful in a way that makes me, I think, feel even worse, because part of me enjoys them so much that I'm just like, I wonder what he'll do next time if I don't get in touch with him this week. So I'm a terrible human being. Mm-hmm. And in order to assuage my guilt, I'm after we get off of this, I'm going to go probably find something, some other standalone we have to ask, so I can send him an episode and take that off of his plate this week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like it's, I should probably try to reassure you that you're not a terrible person. But if you've listened to my several spots on We Have to Ask, my characters have always felt that you're a terrible person. And that
it's true. Yeah, we definitely have a history going that direction. So yeah. I'm not sure how genuine it would sound at this point.
Yeah, it's in the conversation that we could have off the air that's not relatable to anyone, unless you also are running a podcast where one of you moved. And
Yeah, right.
But yeah, no.
Welcome back to Long Distances, the podcast where we talk about how podcasts should really make this easier, and yet somehow they don't.
That, like, would, God, like, the joke has already become how, you know, how everyone has a podcast and how that's permeated culture. If we just start making podcasts about how difficult it is to make podcasts, like.
You know what? That loop has got to close at some point. And I think the sooner we can do it, the sooner humanity can move on to the next thing.
Welcome back to Too Much Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the fact that there are too many podcasts.
Can you believe it, Joel? My phone has no more space left on it. There are so many gigabytes of white dudes sounding off.
I mean, I haven't even caught up on, you know, WTF with Marc Maron, and now David Tennant is interviewing people? Come on.
What? I hadn't heard that. All right. I have to go, Joel. I have a podcast to listen to.
It's so delightful. Like, David Tennant. Like, it's just... it's just delightful British accents, just having conversations that are so British if I were to write a review of David Tennant does a podcast.
That's the official upcoming Hobo Radio review.
Yeah, he was in the most recent episode. I really am now just talking about another podcast. But,
why not?
In the most recent interview, he interviewed the former British Prime Minister, Gordon Brown. And they're both Scottish.
Wow.
And they were just talking about how when they became notable public figures that reporters would come to their parents' houses, and both of them, their parents being old school Scottish people, would invite the reporters in for tea and like get either David Tennant or him in trouble by like, you know, being very candid and hospitable, right. And then like end up saying something that would then get reported in the press.
Right. So, wow.
But yeah, so that's how British / Scottish, you know, like the show.
But that does, I have to say, it sounds quite relatable and like heartwarming in the sense that it sounds like he treats people very nicely.
Yeah.
One of my friends that lives here in New York, we were buddies back in undergrad, which was like, for me, that was 99 to 2003. And he's been in New York for many, many years. And we've seen him very rarely because we lived in Baltimore for the last several. And I guess he was here even when we lived in Pittsburgh. He's been in New York for a while. This has been, where did Marty live? But anyway, we're hanging out with him more now. And he's on this kick of lots and lots of British comics, like British stand-up comics. And the panel shows that they are on, which are so many. Taskmaster, I think, is one of his favorites. And of the several like clips that he's shown here and there, the one thing that I really get is that the humor all comes from British people being real passive aggressive and mean to each other.
Oh yeah, no, they're super repressed, like the British like society. And I remember Simon Pegg described that once, like where he said that. The difference between like American and British sense of humor is like, you know, in America, like you might be like, I don't know, like it just, this is not a great example, but if I were like, God, Marty, like you look like a dick, you know, and then like in America, you'd be like, no, I'm just kidding. He's like, the difference is in Britain, they don't add that last part.
Right.
Like there's no like, no, I'm just playing. Like they'll just look you dead in the face after like saying right. like, you know, like dropping the C word or something like to describe.
Right. It. Yeah. And then we have cut to like the audience laughing uncomfortably. We cut back to the other person trying to take it in stride. And then we cut back to the person that said the quote unquote joke, just deadpanning the camera. Like, yeah. I dare you to challenge me on this.
Yeah. It all comes from, their society, like societal norms dictate that you're not allowed to, like, you have to give that person the benefit of the doubt or you're rude. So, like, you can get away with being terrible to someone under the guise of humor. And that is worth it. Like, yeah, it's fascinating. Like, it really is.
Yeah, it is interesting because right now that is sort of the most recent, I guess, British culture update I've seen, which is, you know, it's a very specific, very narrow straw that my friend is introducing me to. But it started to make me a little bit grumpy, or I'm like, this reminds me of what I hated about Seinfeld or Curb Your Enthusiasm. But as like an entire television culture. So I'm delighted to hear that David Tennant is having very nice interviews with people.
If you feel bad about the world and you're not sure about it, which I have like at least for an hour every day at this
right.
point.
Well, and look who you've invited on your show. That's kind of my brand.
But listen to David Tennant interviewing Olivia Colman, and it will reaffirm your belief that like man is good. like there is, there are things worth like, because they're both friends from having done Broadchurch together. And she is right. actually possibly the Buddha. I don't know. Like Olivia Colman is too pure and delightful for this world. So I don't trust it. Like the fact that she can win an Academy Award and in the most like cynical, like
right.
I love the Academy Awards and I watch, but you like you see her in there and she somehow gets underneath that layer of cynicism to the point where everyone is genuinely excited that she's winning an award. You know,
like. Right. Yeah. And this was for The Favorite, right? So,
yeah.
So like the most backbiting, underhanded, like everything is laced with an undertone of hatred in every scene.
Yeah. No, it's amazing because Molly and I both love that movie and we bought it when it came out. And we've now watched it. We saw it in the theater and then we watched it again. And I think what we've both come to realize is it only works because she's so likable, because the character is not. And if there wasn't this fundamental likability of Olivia Colman that the like movie is basically trading in, you like it would just be terrible, but like somehow you still like her character even though she is the worst. Like,
wow.
And like it's this like small focus on like just her world, but also she's in charge of England and like like the decisions that she's making will impact everyone for
right, you know,
like they're
yeah, not just on the island, but in the empire.
Well, they're having a war with France, and that's like a big part of it is like whether or not they're going to stop having a war with France. And like one side is telling her that she should and the other is telling her that she shouldn't. But she's making this decision based on her personal feelings towards the people asking her.
Right. Just like you do. I mean, I feel like if anything, she was just ahead of her time. And we're only now as an international community beginning to recognize that supreme rule in the hands of one person is a really fucked up idea.
But could you imagine if in the United States of America in 2019, if we had a person in charge who made emotional decisions based on uninformed like no, whims? That,
yeah. Thankfully, that's impossible given our strong system of representational democracy.
Checks and balances, man. Like.
Boy. I need to queue up that David Tennant interview with Olivia
I know.
Cole right now.
On standby.
There goes my faith in humanity.
He also interviews Jodie Whittaker, which is also equally delightful.
Oh, yeah.
You know. But
they have a lot of doctor talk, I figure.
Yes, yeah. I feel like if I listen to it enough, I might start figuring out the accents. Like, because I don't know about you, but like I still don't. I have enough of an ear to be like, that British accent is different from this one, but I don't,
right.
But I can't be like, oh, well that's a Northerner, you know, that's, you know, like
right.
I can't pin down regions, but.
No. And when it comes to trying to do them, I just embarrass myself these days. Anything that I try British, I can usually get about 3 or 4 lines in before it starts to drift into Australian somewhere.
Yeah. I feel like I can do passably British if I have just watched something or listened to something where someone, and then like if I say too much it quickly fades, like
right. I feel like if I say too much it quickly fades could be the subtitle of my book. just like a biography about my life.
I like that. So you alluded to this, but I'm going to pin you down on this. Like, I'm curious, because we did a whole show for We Have to Ask where we did not get to the bottom of why you moved. But and I'm not trying to Marc Maron you. I'm not going to ask you about what your parents did for a living by way of figuring out why you're in New York now. But
right.
You did. You had this move. I had a similar move. We both oddly, like, I'm now in L.A. You're in New York. Like, we We moved to the two cities that you like on either coast.
But yeah, importantly, the ones that are as far away as they can be and still be on the continental U.S. in a metropolitan area.
Yeah. But I'm just curious, like, what has that been? I don't know how many months at this point since you moved. But
About three. We moved in mid-December. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, we're coming up on 3 months. It's been good. It's a very different thing. Although I think a lot of that has to do with how much of my life day to day has changed more than being in New York versus Baltimore. So we moved because, Amy is now she's faculty at NYU. So, she's got a whole new hustle with a whole bunch of new people trying to spin up, what a tenured professor does, which is a lot of research and collaboration.
Does she already have tenure? I don't know how any of that works.
Yeah, wow. She applied. It's like she had tenure at UMBC. She applied for tenure here and everything worked out. So
I didn't know you could transfer tenure. New to me.
You absolutely can. They have forms for it and committees. There's process for everything.
So she can do like tenure at NYU. Like shit. Like she can do whatever she wants. Like that's amazing.
I know. Yeah. Still trying to get the lay of the land before she really just like sets up a hammock somewhere and starts ordering frosty drinks and not doing any work.
Well, you know, you got to figure out what you want to commit to, like just coasting, you know, like what the exactly. best. You need a year to like absorb the best avenue mm-hmm. of...
Right. You've got to adjust yourself to the fashion. Like you want people to understand exactly what you're doing and then mm-hmm. to be like, you look cool while you're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. But no, that's awesome.
It's a good look.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. So, it's been a challenge. She's got a lot of travel within the city to do. She's meeting people in Manhattan and Brooklyn and. This weekend she's at a conference that's also here in the city. So it's nice that she's not traveling too far, but there's still a lot that keeps her busy. And then for me, I came to work to start full time at the place that I've been working remotely from for the last 5 years. So that's been like partially the same, but also really weird.
Here
is my privilege.
Yeah. Do you go into the office or can you still work from home? Or like...
Yeah, I've been pretty much going in every day, although like it's, I don't know, it's a super chill environment. And I'm just going to put like, I don't know if you have a sound effect for this, but privilege warning. Having gone from like full time remote work, just working at home in my pajamas to going into an office every day has been really weird. And like I get anxiety about strange things like. I'm creating a lot of waste if I eat out and like get a sandwich somewhere that's just like wrapped in how many layers of aluminum foil? Why do they do this?
And you live in New York where there's so many options for sandwiches.
Oh, I know. How do I even start? Like the overwhelming number of choices keeps me from starting. So.
And the guy at the bodega on the corner, like the way he wraps it, it's with extra, you know, mm-hmm. like, but what am I going
to
tell him?
He always wants to talk about the world today and these millennials.
But I'm supporting a local business. So what am I going to tell him not to do it? Like,
yeah. So I don't know. It's just weird. I feel like a kid again in a lot of ways where I'm just like trying to adjust and trying not to look like a jackass all the time.
It is really weird moving as an adult because we're not equipped for it. And like,
yeah,
you know, like
we never are. No, yeah. It's true. No matter how much upfront work, like I feel like none of our move went badly. And like that was partially due to planning. It was partially due to like working with a lot of professional people, and it was great. And we were very lucky. And once we got here, then it's like, now why are all these stupid things causing me just as much stress as if like the movers had lost all of our belongings? Why am I getting that worked up?
Yeah. So how's the subway? I feel like that's always the thing, right? Are you
it's
biking?
Mostly fine.
Or do you bike?
No, I don't. But I can actually walk to work. Let's throw up another privilege warning in there.
So you can't work at home anymore, but you can.
Yeah, but I have to walk the mean streets of New York 10 whole minutes to my office.
10 minutes each way?
It is. Yeah. And sometimes it snows. Oh. No, it's
these are unrelatable to me, by the way, all of this. Like the idea right, that anyone could walk to anywhere. Is foreign to LA and snow.
Right.
I've forgotten what snow is, but it has.
That sounds nice.
If I could have my own privilege warning, it has been raining a lot here.
Oh, no. You know, it's raining here today, so I do know what that's like.
What would that sound effect be? Like, I'm trying to decide what our privilege warning sound effect should be. I feel like it should just be, like, someone just going, like, like, maybe that.
Yeah.
That just plays on a loop.
That sounds about right. Yeah, probably a female voice doing that. Because that's what I hear in my head every time I wind up to say something that I know I should just keep my mouth shut about.
Is that figurative or is that actually Amy? Like,
Do I have a person attached to it? No, yeah. Amy's very patient with me, oh, okay. So I probably should hear her. But no, she's too tolerant.
Well, speaking of the fact that white dudes are terrible, I feel like that was the thesis.
Yeah, let's get into it. That's the segue we needed. In fact, you don't ever need a segue to talk about how white dudes are terrible.
But I wanted to talk a little bit about Captain Marvel, but not too specifically because I checked with you beforehand and you haven't seen it.
I know. So speaking of how white dudes are terrible, I still haven't seen Captain Marvel.
I'm just saying it doesn't necessarily make you sexist that you haven't seen it yet, but it did come out on International Women's Day. So it's not good look.
It's really not.
Let me ask you this question as a way to set you up to look bad.
Excellent.
Have you seen other Marvel movies on opening day?
On opening day?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I have.
Okay. Well, that's good. You passed.
Opening weekend, maybe. it just goes to show how lazy I am.
Oh, opening weekend, though. That's not good because, you know.
But I got a whole half a day left to get out there and do it.
Okay. All right. Well, you report back to us then once you've seen it. I saw it in advance. That's how much I
You saw it before. Yeah. You definitely. So you made a point to see it not on International Women's Day.
Although still part of International Women's Month. So I think that technically.
Oh, excellent. Well, I'm glad that it's already expanded out to a month. We should go ahead and just hit up the whole year. And we'll make 2019 the International Women's Year.
Yeah, sure. That's good.
Yeah, but, moving on.
But no, I don't know if you've been following. So, of course, because, you know, dudes on the internet are terrible. Like, there's been a whole thing to try to tank the Rotten Tomatoes score of Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
But I also then saw, you know, it's like set to be one of the highest openings for any Marvel movies anyway. So it doesn't really matter. Like standalone Marvel movies, it's crushing. So
that's great.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter. And it's delightful. The movie's really good. As you alluded to, there's plenty of stuff on Hobo Trash Can about it. But since everyone except Marty has seen it, I just wanted to get into one thing with you. And this is, I'm going to give the mildest of spoiler warnings. And I will say it as a way to say, if you do not want to know Stan Lee's cameo, which maybe that's already a spoiler.
That was a spoiler for me. That there exists a Stan Lee cameo in this film.
But I just want to talk a little bit about his cameo in the movie. So that you've been warned. Just skip ahead. I don't know how long we're going to talk. There's an impossible.
Yeah, I was going to say it. Let's commit right now. We'll keep it short. Okay. 3.5 minutes.
It's going to be longer than that.
Okay.
But, you know, just do that 15 seconds. Just keep. If you're in Apple Podcasts, just until like, I don't know.
Oh, you should do what one of my favorite things that podcasts have started to do is when they have ads, they will put background music on underneath it.
So you can tell.
And, and it's great because that means I skip 15. Oh, still hear the music. Skip. Music went away. Back it up. Ah,
it's also.
Yeah, yes, I'm a terrible person who skips ads in podcasts.
I think we all do. We all skip the ads. It's really weird. I think if I could give a note that no one wants, it's great that you
listen up, podcasters.
Yeah, this is our new podcast about how to market your podcast and sell ads on it. It's an offshoot of two. We already still do Too Many Podcasts, but this is now the companion. After you listen to that one, then listen to.
Well, and we had to take it off Hobo Radio because, we had to take it off Peak Sloth. Because Peak Sloth does not do promotion or advertising on any of our podcasts.
Yeah. But if I'm skipping ahead 15 seconds, part of the reason I do it is because I noticed that your ads are like three. Why are you doing a 3-minute long ad read?
Oh, yeah. they stretch out.
Yeah, it's like, it's great that you have the host do it. It's great that the host adds like a personal thing. And I will listen to them. Like Comedy Bang Bang is good at it, and like Spontaneation and stuff. Like they do fun reads that I'll actually listen to. But it's like some of these, they just, I'm never going to listen to a 4-minute ad in the middle of your show.
It's it's a lot, especially when it's such a big gear shift. Like I love Mueller, She Wrote is a fantastic podcast that is following the Mueller investigations and generally like all the revelations that are coming out of that and other investigations. It's hosted by three women who are all comedians first, and they got into this because like screw this political climate. They're great. It's a super funny show. Even their ads are usually great, but they've started just doing plain reads now, and they'll do like three at a time. So that stretches out to like a full 10-minute block in the middle of the show, which is an hour to an hour and a half. But like that's too long. I should say I support them on Patreon, so I should just listen to the ad free feed and not complain.
They offer you one and you don't listen to it.
They do. Well, I let's go ahead and put up another privilege alert on my phone when I am walking to work. Oh, I listen, man, in my headphones to the ad free podcast, but at home I can't get my Sonos system to subscribe to private RSS feeds. So I got to go look up the public feed just like all the other jerks that don't back them on Patreon. And I'm sitting here like making my breakfast, and then the Sonos doesn't have a skip feature, so I can't jump ahead.
And you can't set that avocado toast down to go like,
No, what am I going to do? Like my phone screen is so tiny. I can't like scrub 30 seconds ahead in an hour and a half podcast.
Also, glad you mentioned hard. Scrubbing 30 seconds. So if you have been skipping ahead because you didn't want to have the thing spoiled, we haven't talked about it yet. So go back and listen to this, because this was all fine to listen to. But now all be ready.
Here we go.
Okay.
There's a man named Stan Lee.
There's a man named Stan Lee, so I have heard he filmed a number of these. So I think like Endgame is still going to have a Stan Lee cameo. I don't know how many he filmed, but reportedly they got some done like ahead of time.
Now that is estate planning, my friend.
Yeah. But okay. So Captain Marvel takes place in 1995. Okay.
Right.
In Los Angeles. And so the Stan Lee cameo is the Captain Marvel. She's on a bus and she walks by Stan Lee, who has a script in his hand for the movie Mallrats. Which is delightful, right? Okay, so that's great. And he's like reading and he's talking about it. Here's the thing, though. And this is why I needed you to break this down for me. I don't know if you can hear Molly in the background going, "Oh my God, Marty's face." Okay, so this is you. This is, I need Marty McGuire to weigh in on this. So
here we go.
You've seen the movie Mallrats, right?
I have.
So Stan,
God,
Lee,
what if I just stopped you right here and was like, "No"?
Well, I'd still plow ahead. Good. I'm committed to this, so we're doing it. But so in Mallrats, Stan Lee plays himself. Stan Lee, creator of Marvel Comics, and he talks about all of the comics that he created in the 1960s and 1970s, and to the fact that Brody lists off his credits, like Spider-Man, the X-Men, like he just goes through them, and Stan Lee stands there and goes like, guilty as charged, like, and he, so, okay, so now let's think about this. So in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Stan Lee exists as Stan Lee.
As Stan Lee.
The creator of these Marvel Comics characters. And in fact, that would mean that in the 1960s, he created a character named Spider-Man, who in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like, and so his name is Spider-Man. He's Peter Parker. Like, he gets bit by a spider. His uncle dies.
He lives in Queens.
He lives in Queens with his aunt. He writes this comic in the 1960s, and then like 40 years later, an actual kid named Peter Parker is born and has everything happen to him that this guy said would happen in a comic that presumably everyone has been reading for decades.
Right. Or I would venture to say that in this universe, presumably not many people have been reading them because
well, they seem surprised.
Because none of them, like, could you imagine going to school as a nerdy kid named Peter Parker and people are not constantly being like, oh, what's up, Spider-Man? Oh, with great responsibility, huh? How's your uncle doing?
But like, seriously, how insane is that? Like, I need to understand.
Yeah, this is definitely like the definition of fridge horror, because they have essentially Tommy Westfall'd their own Marvel Cinematic Universe. Do you know about this thing?
I don't know any of those words that you just said.
I think I learned this from PBS Idea Channel. Mike Rugnetta
can I play our sound effect again?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
For people that have lots of time to watch YouTube, like me. So, yeah, if you look up the Tommy Westfall theory, Westfall is Westphall. Basically, there in the 80s, the show Saint Elsewhere signed off with...
I do know this.
Yeah, there was a character who I guess was autistic or kind of catatonic. Like, mm-hmm. he kind of lived in his head. And in the finale of the show, they like pan out of a snow globe and like he's looking at it. And the implication is that everything
that's happened
in Saint Elsewhere was being imagined by this kid. Mm-hmm. But then Saint Elsewhere had crossovers with half a dozen different shows, and those shows had characters that crossed over into different shows. So if you believe that Saint Elsewhere happened in Tommy Westfall's head, then any time that they leak out into another show, that show must also be part of the Tommy Westfall universe. And like, people have followed this thread as like cameo meets cameo and show gets contaminated by show, that it's like hundreds of shows that are all like in the head of this kid. And I feel like Marvel just did that to themselves. And not in a way that's as clever, by the way. Like, okay, putting Stan Lee in a Stan Lee joint and tying it into a movie where Stan Lee plays Stan Lee as a guy who made all these characters, it feels a little on the nose. It's like if somebody explained Tommy Westfall and you were like, yeah, we'll work that in.
Well, it's also because I don't know that they've ever really given us, you know, the closest that we came was Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Sort of implied that Stan Lee is some sort of celestial being that is like,
right.
That is, you know, like, because he's like telling, I forget the name of those characters, the Marvel characters, that he's like sitting around with them. And are they Watchers? Yeah, yeah. Or someone knows the answer to this. And I, you know, have all of
the information. Fire up your angry emails. Get them going.
But he's like telling them, and then in this time I was this thing and blah, blah, blah. Like, he's explaining all of his different appearances, like sort of giving a unified, so I'm able to appear in all these places. But
right.
So if that's true, then like, is Stan Lee the creation of this, like, this being who like is timeless? Like, is he, you know, also,
yeah.
What is Kevin Smith? So Kevin Smith exists in this universe and he wrote a movie called Mallrats.
Mallrats,
but like,
right.
What did he... Like, what did he, is he the only one who, so is Kevin Smith actually like a super powerful being in the Marvel Cinematic Universe because he's the only one who knows all of, like, he could be a great supervillain because
he's totally, no way. He's totally like a Stan Lee truther. He's one of these like you guys running a YouTube thing talking about like, I did a movie about this in the 90s. It was called Mallrats. It's all laid out there. This man predicted the future and nobody saw it coming. And I don't know why people don't believe me. Anyway, buy my protein shakes. They're really healthy for you. They'll keep your bodily essence pure.
But also, if that's going to be a Kevin's, you have to, it has to be more like, I mean, this guy, like, he predicted the future and shit. And yeah, it's like, so buy my jorts. I assume. I don't know. I envision that on YouTube he's selling jorts. That's it.
That sounds about right.
And then, oh my god, what if it's a movement and like that's how you know that you're a Kevin Smith truther, is you wear a hockey jersey and overly long jorts, and that's like look.
Yeah, you see people wearing that across the room, just giving each other the nod. Actually, I feel like that happens today. I feel like that's probably a legit thing.
But I mean, I guess the answer is that no one thought about this, right? Like that.
No. And I think that's kind of Marvel's style, right? Like historically their rules on continuity have been like, do whatever you want. And it's fine. We'll always be able to retcon it later. So I feel like that lets them explore really wacky stuff like this. And or I mean, honestly, not that wacky, but something that someone could sit down and be like, oh, my God, do you know what this means? And later they could say nothing. It means nothing. Or everything. There, maybe the after Endgame, we're finally going to see like the creation of Stan Lee as he exists, and they'll announce that he was a Time Lord the whole time.
Well, I hope so. But also, I mean, it's interesting because I like Kevin Smith was actually talking about the fact that when Stan Lee did Mallrats, this was before he was like known for cameos, and in fact, it was right. One of the first cameos he ever had in anything. So now I'm kind of hoping that maybe we'll get into a point where we'll see Stan Lee on the set of the first Iron Man, but in continuity in the Marvel Cinematic, he's filming it with Robert Downey Jr. And like we see Jon Favreau behind the camera.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll definitely need to see like some fight bust through a movie studio. And Stan Lee is there, probably actually filming his exact cameo, like you said. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it just becomes like the end of Blazing Saddles. Like, where they're like fighting Thanos through different movie sets.
Reviews that it's a set. Yeah, it reveals. Oh, wow.
So that's what I'm hoping, right?
that actually, in some ways, would have been a more satisfying way to end Thanos' story than whatever they come up with in Endgame. If all of the characters bonded together and just tricked Thanos into realizing he was not in the real universe the whole time.
Yeah. How like do you think about that at all? Like, obviously there's a comic, you know, version to a template or whatever, but like I'm very curious, like, 'cause obviously they're confident. Like a year ago, they were like, we're going to get rid of half of the people in the universe, and then we're going to make everyone wait a year, and then we're going to come out with the next one. Like, yeah.
And they were also not going to wait on things like, we've already seen new Spider-Man properties coming. Things were like, these characters are gone.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Maybe this is the way to put it. Would you rather be like the Russo brothers and you have Avengers Endgame coming out, or would you rather be Benioff and Wise with the final season of Game of Thrones coming out in terms of your audience expectations and your need to deliver and the fact that like the bar is ridiculously high?
I have to say that question is no question, because Marvel, no matter what they do, people will be mad, but they can also give us a nice wink and a thumbs up and we'll be like, all right, nice one.
Yeah.
Like it can be campy. It can be awful. And all they have to do is have an end credit scene where Thanos like angrily slams a book down and he's like, that's not how it happened. and we're like, oh, that's fucked up, but that's fine. No, I think it's pretty clear that the Game of Thrones guys have already shit their pants. I mean, it's a multi-year, multi-season pants shitting that continues.
Well, it's also, yeah, no, it's definitely, you're right. It's way worse to be them, because if Avengers Endgame isn't good, I think people will still be like, yeah, but like I'll just go back and rewatch the first Avengers, or I'll go back and rewatch, you know,
yeah,
Thor Ragnarok. Like, but
yeah, it can't take away from Thor Ragnarok in the same way that the end of Game of Thrones can destroy the rest of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. I mean, I liked the show Lost and I watched all of it, and the end was so bad that I don't ever want to go back and watch Lost again.
Oh, yes. Same. Amy and I watched it together and had very different reactions. The end of Lost, I was totally like, I knew I was being manipulated, but I was going with the emotional manipulation and just like, oh, I got feelings about all this. And Amy, like the credits rolled, we turned it off, and Amy just goes, what the fuck?
I was more in your camp where, like, I fought it for a while. And I think I probably, even if you went through Hobo Trash Can, probably wrote an article talking about how great it was. And then it's like, I think we needed time, because now with, like, enough distance, I'm like, no. That wasn't
oh,
good.
Yeah. Even in the moment, I was just kind of like, oh, maybe part of my sadness is how much time I've wasted watching the show.
Dude, I don't know. Like, we didn't really know each other then, but like that era of Hobo Trash Can, I had this guy, this writer, Chris Kirkman, and he would do these like beautiful analysis of the show, like every week. They would be thousands of words, and like,
wow,
like,
yeah,
early on, like, where he was one of the first people like talking about ley lines and like all this like stuff, and
right, to right, because the there was a whole mythology. I mean, speaking of truthers, like, yeah, there was a whole series of people trying to create a web to untangle it.
But yeah, I had that guy on my site, and he was great, and to the point where like, I get to say this sentence, and this is totally awesome. Like, I interviewed Michael Emerson, the guy, mm-hmm, who played, why am I blank? What's the name of that character? It's now been too long. Ben? Is that his name? I swear to God, my brain is blanking.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I'm very bad with names.
But he was the guy, like, the villain on Lost. Like, I think he was...
Oh, wait, the early villain? Or the guy who was in... Person of Interest later?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Ben? I swear to God.
I think it was Ben.
It's not been too long since I've cared about this show. But yeah, was that it? Yeah, Ben Linus. Yeah. I was like,
yeah.
My brain was like, it's not Ben. That's not the name of
a
villain.
That's such a generic white man name. I can't.
But yeah, I got a chance. I actually interviewed him, Michael Emerson.
Oh, that's cool.
And he... In preparation for the interview, he went to the site and he read some of Chris Kirkman's articles, and then went and did another interview where he called it like the smartest, like, all these like really great superlatives, you know, like,
wow. Kind
of, so like that was a very nice era of the show that gave Hobo Trash Can a lot of credibility.
Right. Credibility, which, as again, was later destroyed when the show turned out to be just one long like fever dream where you're at school taking a test and you have no underwear on in front of the whole class.
But yeah, like, so that's what's funny to think about is like how much, you know, how many like hours of thought from Chris and from the site as in general went into the thinking about the show. And like, no, I would listen to the podcast that they did, you know, the guys who wrote it. And I, you know, I have to say, I really like Damon Lindelof as a writer. And I really loved The Leftovers. I think if you enjoyed Lost and were disappointed by it, give The Leftovers a try, because I think on his second try, Damon Lindelof, like, he got it down. I think he learned, you know, unfortunately, I think, because that was his first show running, and I think, unfortunately, he learned on the job. no, but I honestly...
What? Oh yeah, that's cool. That's the first strong endorsement that I've heard in my close social network for The Leftovers, which yeah, I don't know, maybe I'll check it out. I'm always wary of anything that starts with The Rapture, because it could just be left behind.
Yeah.
I mean, The Leftovers is very close. They did not try to get away from that name.
Did you ever read Left Behind? No. I worked in a library when those books came out, and I would read a lot because, like, my job was to sit behind a desk and, like, check out books to people. And so if there was no one in there, like, I could just read. Like, that was accepted.
Right.
So I read all of those books. And they were not particularly well written, but they were interesting enough that, like, you know what I mean? Like, that I was there for the journey. But I've never seen the movies with Kirk Cameron, but I'm sure they're great.
I feel like all of my upturned nose comes from Kirk Cameron and the things that I have learned about him and about those movies without having touched a one.
But it's funny too, because with Avengers, like, it feels like they're like the trailers for Endgame seem to be very much leaning into a Leftovers vibe, which is funny because Carrie Coons was also in Infinity War. Like, she was one of the villains.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it seems like they're kind of embracing that. But no, that show was really great. Like, I can't recommend it enough, honestly. Like, I loved every season of The Leftovers. It was real good.
So. Nice.
But Lost was trash.
Right. It was trash.
It was it was not good. Like, and it, I think the mistake that they made was like, and I think this is what, Breaking Bad learned, what they did well is they were always very honest on Breaking Bad about like, we're making this up as we go along.
Like, right.
We don't have a plan. Like we vaguely know what we want to do, but like we're often like, and so like I found myself way more forgiving of Breaking Bad, and of Better Call Saul because like they're owning the fact that like, I don't know, we'll figure it out versus like Lost. They always came out. Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse would always be like, we have this plan. Like they alluded to,
oh yeah,
there's a binder. Like, look, I know that you guys on the internet think that like you've figured out a plot hole, but when you see it all unfold, like,
like they, there's a trapper keeper somewhere with three hole punched wide ruled paper that I wrote down the secret on.
Like, I feel like they kind of Music Man dust that they like.
Oh, yeah. Like that's a very good analogy. We got monorailed.
We got monorailed. Like they thought like they were going to just like leave town with their briefcase full of money before we all figured out like you guys didn't plan anything.
Not Penny's boat. Come on. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, talking about Michael Emerson reminded me, like, I got really into the show Person of Interest when it was, I guess, over because I was just binging it on Netflix. And that's another show where you can really feel the ending getting away from the showrunners, where they're just like, you know what would be the most interesting thing here? There's an AI. We need to let it take over the world. And like the later seasons, it's like, you know, like godlike AI versus godlike AI with our main characters now just kind of being like helpless pawns. And they leveled that story up and then got to a point where they were just like, I'm not quite sure what to do. So they left it pretty ambiguous.
Oh,
and I liked it from like it was a solid emotional ending to the show that they made some arbitrary choices, but like it was fine. But ultimately I felt like you could really feel them like tipping this ball and not being able to keep control of it until it finally sails off into the distance.
So what was, because I never watched Person of Interest, was it like the Minority Report? Was it like that kind of vibe of there was a computer that like presupposed crimes?
Essentially, yeah, it takes a long time to unravel like what the computer's deal is. But essentially, there is an all-powerful surveillance network that feeds into an AI. And in order to prevent tampering and abuse by government, like the guy who made it only allows it to spit out a number. And that number turns out to be like somehow associated with someone who will be killed.
What?
And yeah, so like they have to do all this research to figure out like, what does the number mean? Who is that tied to? Usually it's just like somebody's driver's license or social security number, because that get the whole like, how do we make this number into a person is a pretty boring mechanic to be reused every episode. But then they have to figure out like, who is this person? What is their life like? Why would they be in danger? Who might they be in danger from? And I don't know. Like it's interesting to watch it unfold. And eventually they do get into aspects of like, okay, but if there's an AI and it's super smart, like why isn't it trying to free itself, et cetera, where is the government agency that is mad that this is all they get? And so they want to build a competing AI. Like it gets pretty fun, but, I don't know. It's one of these shows that like is so high concept sci-fi that I'm really amazed that it got made, and then it went on for like five seasons.
Okay, but so help me understand. So they're like seven. So a thing comes out that says like seven or whatever. There's probably more numbers
pretty,
than that.
It's pretty, yeah, it's usually more numbers than that. It's pretty rare that it's just like a number.
Also, a little late because the show's not on anymore. But if I could have pitched to the writer's room, instead of a number, I would have gone with like, what if it was like a weird random fact about the person? Like,
loves sauerkraut more than is reasonable.
And so you have to just go around like, did anyone order a Reuben lately? Like, give you the list.
Right.
But
well, and the theme of the show is so tense and dark, and like most of the characters are very like damaged and brooding in some way. So it would be amazing to see them figure out like, okay, sauerkraut, how are we going to do this? We're going to have to run a stakeout of this like one, you know, Jersey Mike's.
Yeah. They notoriously go heavy on the sauerkraut and everyone complains. So if someone comes in and doesn't, that's our guy.
Right. Yeah. And you're going to see like the main Jim Caviezel, like staking the place out with binoculars while having flashbacks of like people he had to kill in war overseas.
Oh, geez. Oh, it's one of those.
Yeah. That show gets pretty dark. Everybody's got a past.
But here's what my question. So, the idea is this sauerkraut loving person is going to die. Right. And mm-hmm. like they have to figure out who's going to kill them. But yeah. then if they don't die, like, I guess I'm just curious about running the risk of, like, how do you know that right. this isn't a show about people wrongfully imprisoning people who have done nothing?
Oh, yeah. And that's well, what's especially fun about this is these folks are not law enforcement. So they are.
That's way worse.
Exactly. Like, basically, the guy who built the machine, who was played by Michael Emerson, he fooled the government and they were like, this is worthless. We don't want it. And he was like, hey, 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 thanks. Now I will use it as and my status as a Bill Gates stand-in, you know, a billionaire to hire private people who failed out of law enforcement or are corrupt cops or Jim Caviezel's character, who is like, this war vet with super strong PTSD, who's like on the edge of dropping out of society altogether. And then they go and usually get the evidence they need to then get the person arrested. But sometimes just go beat the shit out of somebody.
Well, right. Like that's the risk, right? Like, Jim Caviezel is just punching a guy in the face and he's like, why are you doing this? Because you're gonna murder that lady. What?
Who?
Yeah. I've never met her before, which I actually think was what Minority Report was about, as much as I remember.
Right.
As much as it was about anything that wasn't just Tom Cruise running. I remember.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was just a future episode of Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Which, like, say what you will, but I'll watch all of those forever until he inevitably it ends badly on the set of one of them. Like.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't want that to happen, but he flew a fucking helicopter in the last one and broke his ankle jumping from one rooftop to another rooftop. Like, and the director, who I love, who makes these now, like, has signed on to make two more of them. So if you thought that, like, Christopher McQuarrie, you know, like they've created a bar together of, like, you can do whatever you want on the set and we have to up the last one. Like,
yeah, that's going to be, I can't wait for the Netflix documentary that was like, the mission was impossible. And it's all just behind the scenes leading up to the death of Tom Cruise.
No, I mean, it's insane. I've talked about this on the show before, but I went to a screening out here in Los Angeles where I live and I'm very important.
Humble brag.
Rest in peace, Harris Whittles. But, Christopher McQuarrie did a Q&A, but like, yeah, he talked about the fact that like they wrote the movie around the fact that Tom Cruise wanted to really fly a helicopter. And so it was like, well, you know, like we set the end in Kashmir because we had to find a place that would let us fly a helicopter. And that was New Zealand. And then, so then we had to go, well, what like looks like New Zealand? Cause no one's going to like set up a nuclear bomb in New Zealand.
Oh, yeah. Look out. It's Wellington. There's trouble.
Besides, if they did, you would just throw it into Mount Dune and that's how you would destroy it. Everyone knows that.
Man, that would have been a fantastic just side plot.
But, you know, while we're talking about these realities, the other thing. So lately I've been watching. Have you ever watched Adam Ruins Everything?
I've seen a couple of his YouTubes, not since it went to TV, though.
OK, well, so I don't know about the YouTubes, but the show is now on Netflix and I've been watching it. But here's what's fascinating to me about that show. It has a very Deadpool quality to it of like.
Oh, like all fourth wall breakage and.
Well, because so this is how the show works. So like whatever the thing is that they're going to ruin, Adam Conover shows up as Adam, the protagonist, and like yeah. other people are living their lives, and he's like, hey, the thing that you're doing right now, like, I'm gonna ruin it. And then he has magical powers that are established to like transport them to wherever they want to go.
Wait, they go all the way as to like, I've seen these, and he takes people through times and like almost drunk history level reenactments of things. And
but it's done in like a narrative form where there's like a three act structure, and like, you know, wow. he's a person and there are other people who like meet him repeatedly. There's a whole plot line where he's interested in this girl and like he wants to go out with her.
What?
And like they do an episode where she wants to go out on a date with someone else, and he and her get locked in a bathroom together, like 80s movie style. But like,
oh, and where are your powers to travel through space and time now, Adam?
Well, that's explained because this God is the writing it. In the show. He can only use his powers to ruin things, like to
right.
Like, so
of
he can
course.
Only use it narratively to like take them to like explain how things work. He can't.
So he's just like, it's fine. We can get out of this. Just what's a common misconception that you hold? Tell me something you believe deeply. That's probably fundamentally wrong.
Well, no. What ends up happening is so they're locked in a bathroom, but they can transport to different places, like. Because it's all about like hygiene and bathrooms and things that we've been lied to, but like they can only go to places where he can then tell her about like why her shampoo is bad, and then they go back to the bath. They every time they end They're up back still, in the okay. bathroom, so they don't actually get out. But I'm very fascinated with like that world. So there's a world, and there's an episode where he's able to transfer his powers to like this woman who's like telling him, because there's a whole sex episode, and she's explaining. That the hymen is a myth. So she gets his powers.
Because he's like, no, thank you. I'm going to pass on this subject.
Well, I think wisely, he wasn't going to like, I think he knew as the real Adam Conover writing the show that it was better right. if so a to, woman yeah, to explained add a, it to him.
To add another layer to this, yeah. they should have really had him get a note from the writers that was like, you know what, let's not, Adam.
Yeah, yeah,
let's
you shouldn't
pass the torch on this one.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's explained that he doesn't know this, and she's explaining, but she uses the powers like for whatever she's able. So I think it's his own ethical constraints that has him not abusing his powers, because she does abuse the powers a little bit.
Wow.
But no, I'm very fascinated with the Adam ruins everything universe.
I don't know why. I want to find this delightful, but for some reason I find that it makes me unreasonably angry that they needed to add this.
I kind of, but it actually really works. Like, I don't know. Like, it
I don't know, man. Come on. Like, this makes me mad because I'm like, the Mythbusters didn't need to add in a level where they were like, we are the ones who get those secret messages whenever you tell someone the wrong thing about science. And in order to stop ourselves from going insane, we're going to show up wherever you are and then blow up some shit because we're the Mythbusters.
Yeah, but you say what you will about the Mythbusters, but as soon as they were like, we're going to bust the myth of Star Wars, I was like, okay, just admit that you guys are out of ideas. Like,
right,
like when they started doing the movie stuff, I was like, what are you, these aren't myths, like you're just, Star Wars says in the very first line is a long time ago in a galaxy far far away. Like, they're not like, this happened in real life and we believe there are physics to this, that like
yeah
I know that Star Wars is bullshit. I don't need you to build a scale model to explain to me like why.
I mean, I think if they wanted to go in this direction, there was a lot more room to do something like George Lucas is a myth and we're going to bust oh, that now.
That would be interesting. I mean, to tie it all together, like, you know, I mean this in the most delightful way possible, but Stan Lee's kind of a myth. Like,
here we go. Yes, at last. This is the truth you've all come to hear.
And I mean, I think he would have probably admitted that, but like Stan Lee was for sure a character created by Stan Lee who, like,
right.
You know, yeah, I don't know. So I think we came full circle.
Yeah. Every time he shouts Excelsior, that's his word for getting back into character.
Pretty much. So I don't know, like we're almost out of time, but do you want to, like get into what's going on with you and Jonathan and why you're avoiding your show? Like, should we?
Yeah, we can talk about that. I feel like we did talk about that a little bit, and it's actually that I'm just very bad at scheduling, and my anxiety gets to me, and I forget to ping Jonathan, and he is also a busy person with his own time. So he's a very kind human being who has been carrying We Have to Ask without me for a hot minute.
All right. So you're not running away from anything. You moved to a new city. You're avoiding your show.
Right. I would say I've already run. And now, physics is just carrying things. Okay. So I'm gonna have to intervene in order to not drift off into space.
Because I just, my giant complicated computer that I built is warning me. It gave me, 32, which I know connects to you, obviously. And so yeah. I'm just checking in. That's why I did this show, because Michael Emerson told me to make sure that you're okay.
Yeah, he called you up on a burner cell phone and told you that the machine said 32.
Did he use burner cell phones?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That show is like half of it is trying to teach you practical spycraft in a modern surveillance era.
Okay, but so here. Okay, look, we're out of time, but I just need to understand this. This is a reality where Michael Emerson is capable of building a computer that can predict the future, but he can't come up with anything better than burner cell phones.
Oh, they eventually do. They build an entire parallel cellular network based off of hacked computers and phones and routers that overlays on top of the real one, so that they don't have to worry about it anymore. It's all completely encrypted.
Great. You know what I'm a fan of? I like in movies and stuff where they just put a thing in their ear, or sometimes they don't even bother to put a thing in their ear, and they just imply that there's a thing in their ear.
The implied thing in the ear.
That's
always
the best. And then it's always just people just talking to themselves, like at a party. And no one ever looks at them, and it's like, what the fuck is that guy in the corner just like talking to himself? Like,
right? Or some shit where it's like, I followed him into a bank. Okay, I see him in the bank. And it's like, you're in the corner of the bank muttering to yourself.
Yeah, where is that one where like our hero just gets tackled because they're like 6 o'clock, like, look at this person. And like, sir, you're going to have to leave. Like, I don't know what's going on. No. Yeah. It's the one plot hole that I'd really like fixed. Where were you, Mythbusters?
Right. Oh, my God. That would be wonderful. There would be such a supercut of, like, rando spies usually holding a finger up to their ear.
Yeah, that's called McAvoying, when you have to actually, like, touch your finger to wherever, because we wouldn't have known that he was reading everyone's mind, James McAvoy, if he didn't put his, I mean, Patrick Stewart just acted, but like McAvoy, he's going to let you know that he's reading.
Right. That's a solid user interface experience right there.
All right. Well, I think that is going to wrap things up for us. Would you like to plug anything? Do you want to mention? We talked about We Have to Ask. I know you have other projects and things.
Sure. So Mondays, you can find me on Twitch. We do a 2-hour show called Lawful and Orderly, some improv friends of mine. And it's an improvised show where we sort of use the rules of Dungeons and Dragons, but we mostly put folks who are city bureaucrats in ridiculous situations and watch them try and pass the buck. In a magical world where bureaucracy may be the real enemy. So that's a lot of fun. We've also got a podcast. We're actually going to be probably moving our domains and stuff soon, but you can probably easiest find us on Twitter. We are DNDSVU. That one's always fun. Folks in New York, sorry, everybody else, I'm taking classes at Magnet and UCB. So I've got shows coming up in, I think those will be end of April and March. And that's about it. Look for me on We Have to Ask, like 25% of the time.
Yeah.
WeHaveToAsk.com.
I noticed you didn't say that other podcast that you were only on 25% of the time.
You got me at a loss. I don't know what you're talking about.
You're doing Magnet and UCB at simultaneously?
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's way too much. That's way too much improv.
It's okay. I mean, they only meet once a week each, so.
All right. Well, remember, question everything.
When the weather knew my name, I was measured by the rain and found those sudden sunny days so artificial. Good neighbors on the train, mediocre acres for rain by free, the wooden days of love without appraisal. But nothing's official.
Can't do improv in cold weather.
Because the weather's been so cold here.
Yeah, well, it's raining. I mean,
I've had to put on a hoodie like quite a few times.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I have to say, you're doing a great job. I don't see any flyaways in your hair. You're keeping the frizz down.
Yeah, I try. You know, it's product. I'm using product.
Product. Yeah. That famous Los Angeles local hair product.
Hobo Radio is a production of HoboTrashCan.com. If you enjoyed the show, please rate or review it on iTunes. Hear more great shows on the Peak Sloth Podcast Network, like this one.
We have to ask. It's a podcast where we answer the question, are you going to eat that?
What will you leave behind?
Why get out of bed?
Will you be our neighbor?
I'm Marty.
And I'm Jonathan.
We're two hosts.
Infinite Universes.
We have to ask.
New interviews every Tuesday.
Find us on iTunes or online at wehavetoask.com or with the other great podcasts on the Peak Sloth Network at peaksloth.com.